Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and am thrilled to be here this Monday after Mother's Day. Hope all of you tennis moms out there had a beautiful day yesterday. I hope your children thanked you profusely, bowed down at your feet, and showered you with all sorts of gifts to show their appreciation for all that you do for them. And honestly, this tennis parent gig is a challenging one to be sure. And I just want to say I share with all of you the excitement, the frustration, the curiosity, the challenges that you're going through. I promise you I am going through similar stuff too, and we're all here to support one another and learn from each other. And to that end, I have a great guest today. I have with us today Coach Mark Lucero. Mark is one of the coaches with Ramp Tennis Academy, which is located in Carson, California. And Mark is a former USTA player development coach. He has coached NCAA champions. He's coached junior champions. He's coached current tour players. He's on the men's and the women's side. He was the assistant coach of the women's team at Princeton. He played himself at Boston College, and now he is coaching up-and-coming juniors at his own academy, as I said, in Carson. So we have a lot of great stuff to talk about today, and I know Mark has some wisdom to share with us as well as some great experience to share with us. Before I bring him on the air, though, I want to go to a quick commercial. And before I even do that, let me give you the call-in number, because I'm guessing if you're listening live today, you may have some things you'd like to discuss with Mark. That call-in number is area code 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. I'm going to go to a quick commercial break. We'll be back in about 1 minute with today's guest, Mark Lucero.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Welcome back to Parenting Aces. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I am thrilled to welcome our guest, Mark Lucero. And Mark, are you on the line with us?
I'm here. Good morning, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
Good morning to you. It's afternoon for me, but
sorry.
I hope you're having as beautiful a day in Southern Cal as we're having here in Atlanta. We're due this beautiful weather after a crazy winter and spring here.
It's a beautiful day here too, so we're good.
Good, 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 good. Well, before we kind of dig into the deepness of what it means to be a junior tennis coach, I thought I would give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about how you came to start your own academy. I mentioned to our listeners already that you come from USTA as a player development coach, that you've coached a lot of high-level players, played college tennis yourself, was a college tennis coach. I mean, you've had kind of all the roles there are to have in tennis. Why an academy now?
You know, I got together with a group of guys, two other coaches who used to work for the USTA also, and then one guy who I knew in Manhattan Beach who has been involved in tennis in a bunch of different ways, Rick Buchta, as you know, a mentor to a lot of today's up-and-coming pros, his former college player, and I know Rick's been wanting to do something for a while to get involved in the development side of the game, and we all kind of thought it would be pretty cool to do something on our own, and in LA, where we thought there was, you know, there's a need for another program, especially in our area, close to the South Bay and close to Orange County, and we kind of put our heads together and thought that it would be really cool to do something where we could really focus on younger kids. You know, we were going to work with players of all levels, but where we could really do something and try to make an impact on kids when they're pretty, when they're in the formative stages and pretty moldable. So we put our heads together and we thought about how we could do it, and you know, we made it happen, and now it's kind of it's starting to grow, and it's pretty exciting to see it on a day-to-day basis.
So what age groups are you working with?
Right now we have a lot of younger kids, and I think it just kind of started that way because Rick has some younger kids, and they were able to draw a lot of their friends, and then, you know, with word of mouth, it's starting to grow, and we're starting to get some older players. I think in the summertime we're gonna get a lot of different ages, I guess, because, you know, people kind of have their commitments right now during the school year. The boys here are in their high school season, and it's just a little bit busier time. Also, kids come back from school in the summer, college players, and I think we'll have a wide variety of levels out there in the summertime. So it'll be pretty cool for the younger players to see older players, and then it'll be cool for the older players to get pushed by some of the good younger ones.
Sure. And just to mention, I know you guys are offering summer camps. They are listed in our summer camps article on parentingaces.com. So for those listening who like what you hear from Mark, please be sure to check those out. Mark's Academy is Ramp Tennis Academy, and their website is ramptennis.com, ramptennis.com. And so take a look there for information on their summer programs and their academy programs. So I have to ask the hot-button question, because I don't know if you've listened to my show before, if you've had a chance to look through Parenting Aces, but there's been a lot of discussion about the Red, Orange, Green Ball program that USTA has mandated as a result of the ITF mandate. And I'm just curious, are you guys using that program or integrating it with Yellow Ball, or you know, what's your involvement with that?
You know, we are 100% behind the initiative, the 10 Under Tennis initiative. We think, well, it's my belief, I guess, as far as the development side, that the modified equipment is a teaching tool, and depending on the skill of the player, the size of the player, and the, you know, their experience in tennis, you know, we need to pick out the equipment that's appropriate for them. You know, if it's the Nerf balls, if it's the, you know, red dot or green dot or whatever it is, or 25-inch rackets, 26-inch rackets, we need to figure out the best way for the kids to learn quickly. And, you know, as the kids get better, for sure, we want to mix in the Yellow Ball with them. You know, no one's strictly one ball or the other, but whatever is going to make the learning quicker, that's what we want to use. And we need to make the courts and the equipment, you know, size appropriate for these players. You know, just to give you one example, we have a little girl here who's 10 years old. She plays with a 26-inch racket, and you know, it's fine for her. It's you know, probably the right size for her body, but when it comes to serving, she's just not strong enough to hold the racket in the right position as she takes the racket back. And you know, as a result, like, her palm goes up and she gets in kind of the, we call it the waiter position. And, you know, so when we serve, I pull out a smaller racket for her just to try to get her to be able to, you know, maintain the, you know, the integrity of her swing the whole way. And it's a lot easier for her to hold a 25-inch racket, you know, in the serve. And, you know, eventually she'll work up to the 26 and eventually a full-size 27-inch racket. But, you know, as coaches, I think it just takes some you know, some creativity on our part to kind of integrate it into what we do. You know, that being said, it's not like our kids don't play with the yellow ball sometimes. Like, you know, when we drill, we'll drill with the yellow ball. If we're feeding out of the basket, or, you know, they need to be, you know, if we're doing a live ball drill where they've hit with a green ball for a while, you know, we'll progress to the yellow ball. And then if they can maintain it, we'll keep going. And if they need to regress, then we regress. But I don't think it's any, it's one thing or the other. But I think as coaches, we need to be, you know, we need to be creative with what we're doing, and we need to kind of be really in tune with what our players need and how we can, you know, how we can really accelerate their learning by using, you know, the resources that are available to us, and especially with a 10-under format. I mean, tennis is the only sport where, you know, the kids are playing on a full-size field at a young age, and using, you know, full-size equipment. You know, in soccer, we use a size 3 ball, you know, when we're little. We play on a smaller field. Same thing in basketball and baseball. I mean, can you imagine the Little League World Series playing on a, you know, on a major league field with 410, you know, feet to the center field? It would look ridiculous. So, you know, I'm behind it, and I know it's been such a, you know, controversial topic, but I think in time people will kind of grow accustomed to it. And, you know, I think where it really, you know, where it really draws a lot of negative attention is in the tournaments, and
yes.
I'm sure that was your follow-up question.
I think
there needs to be more uniformity. I think there should be more uniformity section to section as far as how the 10-under format is kind of implemented, because I think right now the sections are left to their junior competition councils to kind of determine how they want to implement the format into the tournaments. I think if there's a little bit more uniformity, it might make things easier for everybody, but you know, the I think the green dot ball on a full size court is probably, you know, is a good idea for the 10-unders at the, you know, at the best levels. And then, you know, once they kind of graduate from that level, going to the yellow ball, I think, you know, is fine. I've seen some very good tennis. Like, I've actually had, you know, I've done camps around the country when I was working for the USTA, and some of the best 10-unders in the country would put them on a 60-foot court with, you know, with an orange ball, and you'd be amazed at the quality of tennis. It looks like men's tennis. You know, on a 60-foot court, these guys are 4.5 feet tall. You know, they can cover the passing shots. They can get up to, you know, hit overheads off lobs. You know, you see them playing attacking tennis and dictating with the serve and hitting big forehands on the first shot. You know, defending and, you know, not just kind of playing heavy topspin and counterpunching. So it's, you know, it's almost a window into the game they're going to play as mature players. So it's pretty cool to see. You know, I'm not saying that's how they should always be playing, but, you know, kind of getting exposed to everything, I think, is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. And so your kids that are able to handle a larger racket and the yellow ball, mm-hmm. what do you advise them to do in terms of tournament play?
Well, I think, you know, for me, at every level, I think I always tell parents your schedule is dictated by your results. You know, people ask, like, should I play up? Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I, you know, play pro tournaments? Should I do this? From the tens all the way through pro tennis, I think your schedule is dictated by your results. So if you have a child who is in the tens and, you know, if they're winning and, you know, they have a very good match count and their win-loss ratio is pretty good, then, you know, then I would say play up. But I don't think they're going to be hurt developmentally by playing with green dot balls on a full-size court with, you know, with regular-size rackets. I mean, I don't think that's going to hurt them. But if they're, you know, if they're better than their peers and they're proving it with results and playing the right way to do it, then, you know, then play up in 12s. And if they can kind of maintain a, you know, a decent match count, like if they're getting more than one match a tournament or two matches a tournament, you know, then they can probably hang in the 12s and they're probably good to stay in the 12s. But if they're, you know, losing first round or occasionally winning a round in 12s and then losing, you know, it might be a good idea to drop back to the 10s to kind of get the match count back up and then move up again back to the 12s. You know, and in that sense, you know, the results kind of dictate the schedule, and I'm a big believer in that.
I like that. That's the first time I've heard that statement. And, I mean, I'm trying to process it as you're talking here, and it makes so much sense. And it kind of goes back to Wayne Bryan's whole philosophy of, you know, win on your street, then win in your neighborhood.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's right in line with that. But let your results dictate your schedule. All right, I'm going to have to remember that. That's going in an article. I will give you full credit.
Awesome. Thank you.
So I was mentioning to you before we went on the air that I had read that there was a bit of controversy over the Carson facility. And maybe you can just talk to us a little bit about the history of that facility, what it's been used for, and how you guys came to have the ability to run your academy there and the process you had to go through and all of that.
Sure. So this facility has been open for maybe, I don't know, 6-7 years, something like that. AEG built this multi-sport facility out here. There's a permanent soccer stadium where the LA Galaxy plays and the Chivas USA soccer team. Those are both in Major League Soccer. There's a permanent tennis stadium that used to hold a WTA tournament. They've had Davis Cup here and Fed Cup also. This is the home of USA Soccer. There's probably 10, 12 soccer fields here. USA Cycling's here, USA Track and Field. There's a group called Athletes Performance, which trains athletes in, you know, NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, gets them ready for the combines and the draft and all that stuff. And obviously USTA is here. There's a huge velodrome for indoor cycling. I mean, it's an incredible sports facility here on the campus of Cal State Dominguez Hills. So anyway, the USTA controlled the courts, and you know, it's National Train Center West. Last year, the USTA kind of decided to, you know, I guess make some changes, and along with that, they were going to lease out some of the courts to a private program, and they put out a request for bid, and my group put together a proposal. It took us quite a while. It was pretty extensive. It was extremely extensive, actually. We wrote up our proposal, and, you know, we went through an interview process, and, you know, at the end of it all, you know, the rest is history, I guess. And we, you know, we got the opportunity to kind of run our own program here, which has been pretty exciting so far. I guess that's kind of, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how it all went. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And so how long have y'all been open?
We've been open for about 3 weeks. We did kind of a soft opening in mid-April. We just kind of started with a couple kids, and it's been kind of growing organically since then. So little by little, you know, we've seen the players get better pretty quickly, which is always exciting. And, you know, one of the things Jose Higueras always said was, if you teach the kids, they'll learn. And it's so true. So
right.
it's been fun so far.
That's awesome. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. I was telling you also before we went live that you know, I use this platform to gain knowledge for my own personal benefit as well as for my listeners. So I love to take advantage of the knowledge and experience that my guests have in various arenas. And one of the things that I've always struggled with, and I hear this from other tennis parents as well, is the whole communication process between the parent, the coach, and the player. And, you know, I've written an article, maybe more than one, about kind of the tennis triangle, and certainly others much wiser and more experienced than I am have written those types of articles as well, and how important it is for the three parties to work together to help the player to develop to his or her full potential. But one of the things that comes up, and I've got a poll and a survey running on parentingaces.com right now that I'm gathering some data for a future piece. One of the big conflicts that tends to come up is this whole area of communication. And I know this is something that changes as the player gets older and becomes more independent. But maybe you can talk a little bit about the philosophy that you and your partners have in terms of parental involvement during lessons, during drills, in terms of, you know, scheduling tournaments, time off, camps, all of those types of issues. And maybe give us some guidelines that we as parents can use to help things go a little more smoothly with our relationships.
It's a big question.
I know. Sorry, but you know we've got a whole hour, so let's.
Yeah,
start.
No, it's a great question. I could talk about the parental role for forever.
Well, go.
It's my belief that parents are part of the team. You know, there's like you talked about the triangle. Like I call the team because we're all there to support the player, and we all want the same thing. You know, hopefully. We all want the same thing, which is for the player to be as good as they can be and to, hopefully achieve, whatever it is their goals are. And for that to happen, the parent has to be involved and the parent has to feel included. In the relationships I've seen where the parent's been excluded or made to feel like they're excluded, those things don't work very, they don't work very well or they don't last very long. With that being said, I think it's important that every team member understands their role on the team. For me, the biggest role, the most important role for the parent is, to support their child as a parent and to unconditionally, with the risk of sounding sappy, to love their kid regardless of the results, win or lose. When you see that the child's aware of any changes, I guess, in how they're treated based on the result, like that kind of stinks to see. So the best situations I've been in where, the child feels, the parent supports them 100% and, lets the coach do the coaching. Obviously this is like, there's like a sliding scale to this depending on the age of the child and their experience in tennis. The younger the child, the more the parent's going to be involved and the more normal it is for the parent to be, more heavily involved and, to be there for every practice or whatever it may be. The biggest things for me is that the parent is not on the court, like when I'm working with the player. It can be watching for sure, but, standing on the court's a different story. I think there are exceptions to this. If there's something like technical that we really want to hammer in that I want the parent to be able to reinforce later, maybe I'll ask the parent to come on the court or I'll go over and talk to them and, show them what I'm working on. But I'm a big believer in kind of, a clearly defined, boundary so that it's the space for the player and coach. I guess a lot of this also depends on the player. If the player is, one who looks around and every other shot will look over the parent, then there might need to be more separation so that the child can kind of, put more faith in the coach or sort of focus more on what the coach is saying rather than the parental reaction. But if the child's one who's pretty focused and they're not looking around and they're kind of zeroed in on what the coach is saying, then, the parent can be as close as they want to be and it's not going to affect the output on court. As far as scheduling...
Can I interrupt you one second?
Yes, of course.
I just want to ask, so if you see that the kid is looking to the parent,
uh-huh.
would you say to the parent, why don't you go get a cup of coffee and come back in 45 minutes? Or, how, let's talk nuts and bolts here.
Sure.
How does that work? Because, if the parent didn't grow up playing or even, let's say in my case where I grew up playing, but I didn't grow up playing at the level where my son plays, we don't always pick up on this stuff and don't understand that we're distracting or causing a problem for the coach or for the player. So how would you handle that situation?
Yeah, well, I see it as our job as coaches to educate the parents as well. And in that situation, I don't have to be, crazy about it or aggressive about it, but I can go over and have a conversation and ask them if they've noticed this and, maybe it might be better, for a couple minutes if you kind of walked around a little bit and see how the child deals with it, kind of forces the child to take a little bit of ownership of what they're doing. We can kind of come up to a situation, try to come up with a solution that works, for both of us. And if the parent doesn't want to do it, they don't have to do it. It's much different, I guess, working privately than working for the USTA. In that sense, but in my perspective, like I think most of the parents want to have their child be pretty productive on court, and so we'll do whatever it takes if it means walking around, if it means running some laps around the facility or going to Starbucks or whatever. Like you said, like, you know, I think they'll generally do it as long as they're, you know, they're aware of it. A lot of times, like you said, they're not really aware of what's happening on the court. They're kind of zeroed in on listening to what the coach is saying. Like, I mean, my dad was probably at the majority of my lessons, and he, you know, during the course of the following week would, you know, recite everything back through memory what the coach said. And, you know, I think that's what most parents are wanting to do, just to kind of reinforce, you know, to the kid what they're paying for. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think there's, you know, there's nobody out there who's kind of trying to be a distraction in the lesson.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for that.
Sure.
So let's move on, and you were going to touch on
scheduling and some other things. Again, I think this kind of corresponds to the child's experience in tennis and their level. I think the better the player gets, I mean, I guess better is totally subjective, but as the child moves up in the rankings, I think they can lean on the coach a little bit more for scheduling advice. And I guess it depends how often too the coach sees, or I guess how involved the coach is with the player. I guess the more the coach sees a player, I think the more of a role they should take in scheduling, creating the schedules and that sort of thing. Because I think like in general, the coaches can have kind of, or at least they should have a better idea of how the schedules work and how to properly schedule for a player, kind of thinking about periodization, when the player wants to peak, you know, when there's training blocks, when there's sort of, you know, game development blocks, that sort of thing. You know, when the child, I guess, is learning tennis or when they're still developing, I think, you know, the parents kind of schedule when they see fit and can kind of, you know, make tournaments when it fits in the academic calendar. Again, and this, I guess, goes for all levels of players. You know, the player, parent, and coach should all be collaborating on, you know, the best times of year when there's exams or when there's, you know, whatever, family commitments. So that everybody can kind of be on the same page as far as when the child's competing and when they're not competing. Family finances, I know, play a role. You know, what's feasible, what's not feasible, that sort of thing. So there's a whole bunch of, I guess, factors to take into account when making the schedule. But I think it should be a collaboration between, you know, probably the parent and coach and obviously the player, if, you know, depending on how much the player wants to play, depending on what they're into. And I guess I'm always under the assumption that this is, like, you know, the player's number one thing, and that's probably not always the case.
Mm-hmm. And what about in terms of, you know, looking at the player's goals or, you know, like, for example, if a player tells you, you know, my goal is to get into the top 10 in the nation this year.
Right.
You know, at that point, do you sit down and look at the tournament schedule and you know, kind of map out a plan to help that player get there? Or how does that work?
I mean, first, I guess it depends, you know, it depends where the player is. And, I think generally if I am working with a player who's, you know, whatever, 50 in the country or 60 or whatever, and they want to, you know, get into the top 10, you know, for me, the biggest thing is, you know, addressing the things in their game that are going to help them get there. And if I do that, like, the results will kind of take care of themselves. So I think we think from a developmental point of view, we look at, you know, where they need to get to and work backwards. And the same for a schedule. Like, we think about where we want to get to and work backwards. So, you know, we want to give them, I guess if you're talking about scheduling, as many chances for exposure to big points as possible. That means, you know, playing all the supernationals. That means playing all the national opens and, you know, some bigger tournaments as well, like the Carson International Spring Championships. You know, if they can play the Orange Bowl, let's play the Orange Bowl. If they can play Eddie Herr, let's play Eddie Herr. So we know we're going to play those tournaments, and to do that, we know we need to get endorsed by the section. So what do we need to do to get endorsed by the section? And we look at those guidelines. And so for me, I guess everything's kind of working backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once we know where we're going, then we can figure out how to get there. And so that's why it goes back to the communication aspect. The coach and family of the player need to know the player's goals. And, you know, obviously once we know the goals, then we can figure out, you know, like you said, we can figure out the path how to get there.
And is goal setting part of what you do with your players?
Yes. You know, my belief and my experience has always been whenever I start working with a new player, we'll sit down and we'll talk. And you know, this is, again, like in my experience has been, you know, I guess more high-level players, we'll sit down and talk and we'll kind of talk about where they are. I'll lay down my expectations for the player, and generally I'll ask what their expectations of me are. And then we'll talk about goals. And, you know, once everyone's on the same page, then we can move forward and there's no surprises. The times where I haven't done this with players, that's where the surprises come from, and there's bumps in the road, and, you know, things generally aren't as smooth. But goal setting is a huge, huge component. And, you know, like we talked about just now, if we don't know what the player wants out of the game, then the expectations for, you know, from me, for the player, and the expectations for the player from me are often skewed and don't match up, and that's when, you know, that's when issues arise.
And is the parent part of that process? I mean, when you sit down with the player to discuss their goals, you know, maybe you have a one-on-one with your player, but at what point is the parent brought into that?
Yeah, you know, if the player is younger, it can often be at the same time. When the player is a little bit older, you know, we'll have the one-on-one with the player, and then I'll have the one-on-one with the parent. And then, you know, oftentimes then kind of all of us will meet after, too. It just sort of depends on the situation, but it's important, you know, it's just as important to me with the parents in the beginning as it is with the player, like 100%.
And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of the information out there written about junior tennis is so focused on getting these kids ready to play college tennis or getting them, you know, on the tour and able to be successful on the tour. But honestly, you know, the further I get into this, the more I'm realizing that, A, those two goals are not right for everybody.
Right.
And B, even if a player has the ability to reach those endpoints, that may not be what the player wants. And, you know, I feel like kind of the industry as a whole is doing a disservice to the kids whose goal may simply be to play on their high school team or to be, you know, part of a one of the junior team tennis teams in their neighborhood or in their town and get to compete with their friends. I mean, are you seeing that, or are you kind of isolated from that other sector because you are a high-performance academy?
You know, I see it, and it's funny that you mentioned, and it's not funny that you mention it, but it's, you know, I see kids sometimes, and you know, the stark reality that I see is often they've gotten to a certain level and have acquired a certain skill level that it's almost like they can't turn back because they're, you know, they've reached a certain level of quote unquote good, and they feel they're so far into it, and you know, tennis is tied up so much into their identity that there's not really a way for them to not play, and you know, they kind of feel trapped. I have told certain players that, you know, just because you're, you know, good at something doesn't mean you have to keep doing it. And, you know, if you're not taking any joy from it and not enjoying what you're doing, you know, there's really no reason, you know, there's no reason to kind of keep putting yourself through it. And, you know, I think it's an assumption that we make as coaches and as parents, probably when we see someone who has an aptitude for something, I won't use the word talent, but an aptitude, or they have some skills, and we, you know, we want them to keep going because we, you know, we think about what could be, when a lot of times, you know, like you said, maybe they want to play for fun. Maybe they want to play for the high school team or, you know, or whatever it is. And I think it's important that we kind of make the player feel comfortable telling us that, you know, this is all I want from it. You know, I don't want to do whatever it takes to get there, or I don't want to play college tennis because I've seen what it, you know, I've saw what it did to my brother or whatever, you know, whatever their reason is. You know, because the reality is that to get to the, you know, the college level and, you know, Division I tennis or the pro level or, you know, even like the high junior level, you know, there's so much stuff that you go through that's not very fun. And there's, you know, the cheating in some of these tournaments is just, you know, ridiculous. Like the behavior of some, you know, of some parents that you see is just, you know, is just ridiculous. The way it makes, you know, some players so, you know, selfish that you see a lot of times, like, is not, you know, is not pleasant. So there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you have to kind of dodge and a lot of things you have to deal with, as you, you know, as you continue in this tennis thing. You know, it's not easy. And for players who, you know, who see that, or for players who just want to play for fun, like, you know, I think we just need to make them feel comfortable telling us that and make them know that it's okay and that we support it, you know?
Sure. Oh, it's funny because I have tried to make a point every few months or so to check in with my son on that level and say, you know, is this still what you want? Is this still your goal? Because if it's not, you need to be straight up with us and
right.
we need to make the appropriate changes. And he gets, you know, so offended that I
would into it.
Ask the question. Well, he sometimes though, well, and in fact, I was just having this conversation with another coach this morning. Coach Chuck Creasy calls this the sophomore slump. My son's just finishing his sophomore year of high school, and it's been a rough year. I mean, I'm going to be honest. It has been a really rough year for him. The motivation factor's been lacking at periods. The willingness to commit has been lacking at times. And, you know, unfortunately, the results, you know, often reflect that.
Right.
And he's also been plagued with a couple different injuries that, you know, just that'll wreak havoc with your mental state anyway. But it's so tough as a parent when you as the parent, you as a family, and your child have made the sacrifices. And I'm not talking necessarily about from a financial standpoint, but from a time standpoint,
sure.
from, you know, making the hard choices on the weekend. Do I go to this party or do we go to a tournament? You know,
mm-hmm.
do I spend the night out or do I stay at home and get a good night's sleep so I can train well tomorrow? I mean, those types of sacrifices that every kid who plays any sport at you know, at a high level is familiar with. And so it's, I don't know, I, you know, from, again, from the parent side, I feel like it's my responsibility to hold my son accountable
for
those
sure.
decisions, but providing, like you said, a safe haven for him to say, you know what, I'm done. I'm as good as I'm, you know, I'm happy at this level. I'll play tennis the rest of my life, but I'm done with this. And I don't know. I mean, if my son ever said, yeah, I'm done, I'm not sure how I would react. I know how,
right.
how I would like to think I would react. But, I mean, have you gone through that with any parents and kids over the years?
You know, I was working with one player actually earlier this year, helping out just in a kind of week, a couple weeks, and she was a professional player, and she actually said she was done. A lot of people, you know, were excited about her and, you know, thought she could be a top, you know, top 30, top 40 player, and she just kind of walked away from the game and had enough. You know, that's, I think, one experience I've had with it. Some other, as far as junior players, not as much more. I have a couple younger kids that are kind of in that sort of situation. But I actually think you brought a great point about, you know, holding your child accountable for the, you know, the sacrifices of the family in terms of time and all these things. I think that's important. Letting them know the expectations, you know, like the expectations, what, try your best, try hard, focus hard, compete hard, and, you know, try to play the right way. At the same time, we also know that these are kids, these are teenagers, and, you know, they're not little professionals, and so sometimes they're going to check out, sometimes they're not going to, you know, come in with the best effort, and understanding that, you know, this is going to happen sometimes, it's part of you know, part of being a kid, kids are dumb and kids are, you know, immature. But we know that in the back of our mind and we don't tell them that, but we hold them accountable and we let them know the expectations, you know, are a certain way. And if, you know, if this continues and there's consequences and, you know, we don't have to do this anymore, or we won't do this anymore because, you know, you're not, you know, you haven't earned it. But if you're going to keep doing this, if you choose to do this, then you're committed to it. And these are the expectations that we have for you. So, you know, I think I think that's fair. And, you know, if they're going to do it, it's a privilege and they need to kind of treat it as such.
And so when that's going on between a parent and a player, how much of that do you as the coach want to know about? How involved do you want to be in that process?
You know, I think it's pretty important because, you know, the coach can't kind of operate in a vacuum. I think it's important. You know, it's important for coaches to go to tournaments. And if they go to tournaments, obviously they're going to know this is happening. If the, you know, coach isn't able to go, if the tournament's out of town or whatever it is, you know, I think it's important. Like, I think the coach should know right away because the player should either be following up with the coach with how the tournament went or, you know, as a second result, like the parent can follow up with the coach about how it went. So I think the coach should be pretty involved. And a lot of times, too, the coach can kind of provide some perspective, being sort of a more neutral third party versus the parent and the player who are probably pretty emotionally involved with each other as well besides the situation. So they can kind of offer a little bit more, I guess, balanced feedback or advice. So I think the coach can be pretty valuable sounding board in this kind of situation.
Great. All right. On that note, I'm going to take another quick commercial break. For those of you listening, if you'd like to call in and chat with Mark, our number is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. We'll be right back after this quick commercial.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
We are back with Parenting Aces. I'm your host, Lisa Stone. Today's guest is Mark Lucero of Ramp Tennis Academy. And given that we just heard from our sponsor, Nike Camps, Mark, let's talk a little bit about what you guys are offering in terms of summer camp and what parents and players should look for in a summer tennis camp experience.
Awesome. We are very excited about our summer camps. We are going to be offering, we have a bunch of weeks of camps. Basically, the structure of our camps is like this. We'll have practice in the morning for a couple hours. They're going to be drilling. It's going to be working on addressing, you know, the fundamentals and the players, I guess, according to their level for the younger, I guess, for younger or newer players. We're going to do a lot addressing, you know, technique, making sure the technique is competent, making sure they're within the parameters of what, you know, of what good players, of what pro players do. You know, I wouldn't say we're an overly technical program. You know, there's not one way to hit a forehand, but we do pay attention very closely to technique, and we don't want any players to be, you know, working with technique that's going to limit them later on. So we'll, you know, we definitely address things, and, you know, we have a certain set of parameters that we work within as far as technical issues. We believe in footwork, and we believe in tennis as a game of movement. So all these things are going to be addressed in the morning in the drilling session. You know, drilling is a combination of coach feeding drills, hand feed, racket feed, live ball drilling, and more competitive drilling. There'll be a fitness component in the afternoon, and there in the afternoon will also be a couple hours of match play or set play. So every day competing and every day drilling. I think it's important when parents are looking at camps to put their child in, kind of understanding, it's important for the parents to understand what they want from the camp. If they want kind of a developmental camp, or if they want a camp that's, you know, got a bunch of different activities and more of a, you know, kind of a fun, typical like summer camp. I guess knowing what they want, and then I guess looking at player coach ratios and looking at sort of the structure of camp, and I guess the quality of the instructors. I guess those are a couple other important factors when selecting a camp. We want to address different things according to the needs of our players, and so we're looking to have we want competent coaches working with with players that want to get better. For better players, things are going to be addressed like patterns of play, how to sort of implement their game style, like tactical ideas, that sort of thing in the drilling. And then, for all players, we make sure that stuff kind of translates in the afternoon when they're playing points. So they see this kind of the correlation between what they're doing in the morning and what they're doing, in the afternoon when they're kind of incorporating it into competing.
And for your camps, are they day camps only, or do you have overnight?
We do day camps. We don't have dorms here, so we're not able to kind of offer the sleepover component. For players who want to come from out of town, like, we're able to secure some rates at a local hotel. They're pretty favorable, but we don't offer the stay over camps just because there's not the infrastructure here at the facility that would enable us to do that.
Gotcha.
And
so you're doing week-long camps, and are they geared toward all ages and stages, or do you have certain weeks that are devoted to, beginners or
right.
high
Great
performance
question.
Or something like that?
Yeah, we go Monday through Friday. All weeks can handle all levels of players. We have one session that's a 10-under camp only. All weeks offer, we offer 10-under, but there's one week that we just want to only do 10-unders, and that I think is in July, but beyond that, every other week we have all level of players. I'm also doing I'm offering like 4 weeks of a college camp for college players, where they could come in and basically train like pros. They'd be in a environment that's basically two players or three players to a coach max. They'd be training like professionals, basically. It'd be, high intensity. Ideally, they would use it as a training week before going to a tournament. I don't know if any other programs do something like this, but I've been kind of sending some of these things out to some college coaches, which, I think it'll be pretty cool. But for all the other weeks, for juniors, we'll take kids who've never held a racket, and we'll take kids who, are top 10 in the country, and we'll put them with the appropriate group and the appropriate coach, and they're going to get better. So we're pretty excited about it, and I hope some people are too.
That sounds fantastic. I love that idea of the camp for the college players, because it seems those kids kind of get forgotten about in the summers. And
totally, the coach works hard with them all year, and then
right.
kind of they go home and someone either makes some feed balls to 9-year olds.
Right.
Or
right.
They do an internship and no one wants to help them out anymore, so it's tough. I remember what it's like, so
that's great. Okay, so I'm going to switch gears on you one more time. We're
sure.
down to our last 10 minutes or so. I want to talk about what the difference is between being a USTA coach, coaching at the professional level, and now coaching at the junior academy level. And maybe you can compare those different experiences and how you've used what you've learned in one arena to help you in the others.
Sure. I think at the higher level, there's much more coaching involved. And, doing what I'm doing now, there's much more teaching involved.
Explain the difference.
I see that as two different things. Like, the teaching involves there's a lot of instruction, there's a lot of technical work, a lot of repetition, and by repetition I mean the player doing repetitions, sort of the idea of deep practice and skill acquisition. And with the higher level players, with the pros, the coaching, involves kind of refining and tactical adjustments or tactical you know, sort of additions to their game, strategic things, and sort of game planning, that sort of thing. And you know, not that there's never sort of technical adjustments made, but you know, I guess if you're looking in terms of you know, percentages, the percentage of coaching is much higher versus teaching, you know, for the better players. And then for the younger players, it's, you know, a much, much higher level of teaching versus coaching. So I see that, you know, as the, you know, with the USTA, we always used to say first a teacher, then a coach. So, you know, I think that's kind of brought to life with what I'm doing now. My experience with the USTA was a very, very good one. You know, within the USTA, you know, there's a lot of the intensity with which we work is very high, and as such, it really pushes you to be a better coach. And you know, the expectations are very high, and you know, I really felt I grew as a coach there. And you know, it's made me very, I guess, much more effective doing what I do now. And you know, I'm very, you know, grateful for the experience, and I'm happy to kind of share it with these kids now. So.
And so you went from college coach to player development coach with USTA to now academy coach, is that right? Do I have the progression correct?
Yes. Yeah, I jumped around, yeah.
So, but, I mean, that's an, you know, if you think about it, I mean, coaching at the college level, and I did not play college tennis, so, you know, I'm just spouting what I've read, but you know, it seems very strategic when you're coaching at the college level. I mean, you're, you know, trying to structure lineups and pair doubles teams and, you know, make sure that you can go out there and win as many matches as possible, all the while keeping your players motivated and hoping to God that they get the grades they need to
right.
Stay eligible to play, right? I mean,
yeah,
I hope they
get more sleep on Thursday nights, you know?
right.
Yeah, it's very much strategic, and, you know, there's a lot of management that goes on. You know, I think there's not as much development that goes on as there could be. I think generally there are a few programs that do a pretty good job of that, but, you know, I think it's really hard to do it, you know, kind of having had the experience in college. You know, I think your time gets so consumed doing so many different things, and obviously thinking about the team result, and, you know, because the team is what's most important, the individual development kind of gets pushed aside a little bit, or can get pushed aside. So I think that's one area where, you know, where college tennis could improve a little bit. I think most players get better just in general from, you know, being in the environment with, you know, a bunch of players similar to their level that they can hit with every day. You know, kids who maybe haven't had that, you know, really kind of thrive in that situation and getting good match play in. For some of the top kids, you know, a lot of times you'll see them, you know, not a lot of times you'll see them, but sometimes you'll see them plateau or maybe struggle a little bit in college when they're used to winning so much in juniors, because they have a little harder time kind of adapting, and maybe the, you know, the commitment to development from the coaching staff isn't quite, you know, where it should be. So it just kind of varies program to program. That being said, like on the men's side right now, I think there are some unbelievable developmental coaches out there. Like obviously you see like what's happening at Virginia. Andres Pedrosa, the assistant, is an unbelievable coach. Mark Merklin at Michigan, unbelievable coach. David Roditi at TCU, you know, Peter Smith at USC. Like there's so many guys around the country. Like Florida has Brian Shelton now, who's unbelievable. I think the level of coaching on the men's side is very, very high. And, you know, there's so many guys, I can't even name them. You know, if I was a men's player now, it'd be a really, you know, exciting time to get into college tennis.
Mm-hmm. Except for the fact that, that they're only 4.5 scholarships.
I know, it's brutal. That's brutal.
It makes it a bit challenging, for
it's
sure.
Tough.
Well, so when you played in college, do you feel like you continue to develop?
I did. Because I was highly motivated, so like I made sure that I was improving.
How did you do that?
I worked really hard. I did a lot of extra stuff. You know, I found guys who wanted to get better. Also, you know, I would go out in the ball machine by myself. I think there's ways to do it. You know, in college, you have to be highly motivated and sort of understand what your goals are, and be willing to kind of do it. You know, if if people aren't going to necessarily, you know, make you do it. I think that's a really important piece of it in college.
And, I mean, that definitely spills into juniors as well. You know,
sure.
There's not every kid has the advantage of a coach who's going to, you know how to help them get where they want to be or have the commitment to help them get where they want to be. And a lot of times it does require that self-motivation. And, you know, I think that's one of the biggest challenges for a lot of the kids is continuing to find that motivation day in and day out when there's so many distractions. And I can only imagine in college, you know, the distractions are way bigger and
right.
Potentially way more fun than they are as a junior player. But, well, it's interesting that you say that. And, we're just starting at our house to explore the whole college recruiting process. And I'm really looking forward to learning a lot as we go through it and hoping that my son finds the right program for him and sticks with all of this at least through his college years. Because for me, tennis has always been there. I didn't play consistently through the years, but I've come back to it several times over the course of my life, and I'm 50 years old now, and I've probably stopped and started four or five times over those five decades. But, you know, it's such a gift to have that skill set.
Yeah.
And especially now, you know, at the age I'm at now where my kids are growing up and, you know, aren't as needy in terms of my time on a day-to-day basis, you know, what a blessing to have tennis to call up a girlfriend or...
It's amazing, you know. It's amazing. Like I've tried to quit tennis a couple times. I've tried to get out of it, and every time it's pulled me back in. You know, my brother, my younger brother, doesn't really play anymore. He's a lawyer now, but you know, he'll go play with the partners from his firm, and they're always, you know, like my brother was a very good player, and you know, they're always like, oh wow, you know, like this guy, you know, is such a good tennis player, and you know, or he'll use it to like meet girls or whatever. Like it's unbelievable, like what tennis can do for you, like you know, as an adult. You know, I went to law school for you know a year and thought I was gonna quit tennis, you know, after I stopped playing, and you know, I took a teaching job just with you know a local family, and you know, all of a sudden I was like, gosh, I love this, and you know, next thing I knew, I was at Princeton and I was done with law school and. You know, my life was changing paths. So it's, you know, tennis is like, it's the cliche, but tennis is a game of a lifetime. And, you know, I'm so grateful for what it's given me and, you know, the different paths it's taken me on. It's, you know, it's an unbelievable game. So.
Well, and it sounds like you're good at sharing that with others. And I think that's one of the challenges, especially with teens, and you know, younger kids are a different animal for sure and present their own challenges. But teens are, you know, typically they know everything. Nobody else knows anything,
right.
Especially anybody over the age of 20. And, you know, to get them to understand, going back to what we were talking about, you know, knowing when it's time to quit, knowing when you don't have that commitment anymore or needing to take a break, but also realizing that, you know, you've got this skill set, this ability that you're always going to be able to draw on, whether
right.
from a recreational standpoint, a professional standpoint, I mean, who knows, but I think, you know, for parents, if we can continue to talk about that aspect of the game with our kids, I think it would really help them. And I think I've shared this story before, but at one point my son was homeschooled. He came home girls one day and decided he didn't want to go to regular school anymore. He wanted to be able to devote more time to his tennis training. And this was in seventh grade. And after a lot of discussion, we finally decided we would give it a try. And the day before we were to withdraw him from school, he had a complete and total meltdown and just went into panic mode. Oh my God, what if we do this and I'm still not good enough and I'm still not winning and, you know, I will have, you know, been pulled out of school and devoted all this time and oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And he was like in panic mode. And he was 12 years old at the time, or 13 years old. And I said to him, you know, you are at a level now that you will always be the guy that people want on their team.
Yeah.
And I don't care if you quit tomorrow, you know, you will always have that. And you're 13. There's so many different things for you to do in this life besides play tennis. But, you know, a lot of times our kids get caught up in that in the moment. And like you said, their identity is so wrapped up in being a tennis player. And one of our challenges as parents, and I guess your challenge as a coach is to help them visualize themselves as more than simply a tennis player.
100%. And we need to make it fun and figure out ways to make it fun at every level, from beginners to pros. And, you know, fun doesn't mean messing around, but if we have to figure out how we can sort of, you know, press that button in them that makes it fun or that appeals to them in whatever competitive sense, you know, that they have. And, you know, we figure out how to get through to them and, you know, make them enjoy it. And if they can enjoy it, you know, they're going to be willing to kind of go through, you know, the ups and downs that tennis has in store for us. So.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being with us today. You have shared lots of great information. And for those of you listening, I encourage you to share the podcast with your friends and let them share in Mark's wisdom and knowledge. And, Mark, I hope you'll come back on the show, you know, periodically, check in with us, let us know how the academy's going. I sure would love to hear more about how your camps go. And, you know, just kind of keep track of where things are going. So
awesome. I'd love to. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great week, everybody. We've got another great show coming up next week. And until then, keep track with us on ParentingAces.com or on Twitter @ParentingAces or our Facebook page. And we'll see you next Monday. Have a great week.